Ladies? Any ladies will try? Matajis? Deham body vipanna completely failing akila all chetana feeling adikam symptoms patyu of her husband prithivyaha the world sorry datasya of the merciful cha atmana also of herself alakshya by seeing kinchit very little cha and vilapya lamenting sa she sati the chaste chittam unto the fire ata now aropayat placed adri hill shanu I'm sorry sanuni on top. When Queen Archie saw that her husband, who had been so merciful to her and the earth, no longer showed symptoms of life, she lamented for a while and then built a fiery pyre on top of a hill and placed the body of her husband on it. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. After seeing all the life symptoms of her husband stop, the queen lamented for a while. The word kinchit means for a little while. The queen was completely aware that her husband was not dead, although the symptoms of life, action, intelligence, and sense perception had ceased. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 13, Dehenasmin yata dehe, komaram jovanam jara, tata dehantara prapti, tiras tatra na muhyati. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body, from bodyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. When a living entity transfers from one body to another, a process generally known as death, a sane man does not lament, for he knows that the living entity is not dead, but is simply transferred from one body to another. The queen should have been afraid of being alone in the forest with the body of her husband, but since she was a great wife of a great personality, she lamented for a while, but immediately understood that she had many duties to perform. Thus, instead of wasting her time in lamentation, she immediately prepared a fiery pyre on top of a hill and then placed the body of her husband on it to be burnt. Maharaj Prithu is described here as Daitya. For not only was he the king of the earth, but he treated the earth as his protected child. Similarly, he protected his wife also. It was the duty of the king to give protection to everyone, especially to the earth or land while he ruled, as well as the citizens and his family members. Since Prithu Maharaj was a perfect king, he gave protection to everyone, and therefore he is described as Daitya. So I have to thank Prabhu for forcing me to speak. I'm always reluctant to speak because I have to admit that I have a tremendously and almost incomparably understandably great spiritual master. I have to admit to that. But I've never been qualified to be a devotee or to speak. Srila Prabhupada used to have me speak, and that was a million times more tremendously embarrassing. One of the last times he had me speak was when we went to Hyderabad farm, and it was Srila Prabhupada's very important desire to establish what he called the farming movement, but that's another topic. He didn't call it the Hare Krishna Farmers Movement. He called it the Hare Krishna Farmers Movement. Actually, he just called it the Farmers Movement. So I had been in India before and been trained in Telugu, but I knew mostly I had practiced in village language and had never spoken Telugu in public. Speaking on a lecture requires a different language than. And I had not spoken that language in some, almost 10 years. So just imagine, even if, like, if your language is Hindi or Telugu and you don't speak for 10 years, then a little difficult. So I went to the room and just, because he had had me do this before in 1976, in 1971 he had me do that in front of one of his godbrothers, and 1.5 hour he had me go on talking. So I thought, this time, let me look in the dictionary and just see some words so that I can say something. Because if you haven't known the words or forgotten the words, it's difficult to give a talk. So Harisari Prabhu came in the room and said, Srila Prabhupada wants to know what you're doing. Srila Prabhupada would always look after us. And not that he was like a big taskmaster. Prabhupada was always kind, even when he gave us correction. But don't touch Tulsi. If you touch Tulsi during Kirtan, he'd snap. He'd give you. But then he'd be next. Forget it. He would give the correction. So I wasn't fearful, but still every time I would go before Prabhupada, I was thinking, you know, I shouldn't be in the room there. You know, he's a great man, and I shouldn't be before such a great person. Anyway, he came in and he asked me what I was doing. And I said, I'm just looking some words in the dictionary. See, the Prabhupada says, no, no. He says, we are not professional speakers. He says, simply, you should speak from your heart. So it's just a small point. Prabhupada's mind was that maybe I was trying to speak very nicely and preparing a good lecture. But Prabhupada was always kind. If we had some little attachment for Krishna consciousness, we should just deliver that. So I have very little, but still we'll try to say something. So this purport first is about the position of a person in Krishna consciousness. The Queen Archie, of course, is, as Prabhu was saying, she's also Shakti Vaishavatar, but taking the position of the Queen's wife. And she's not on the bodily platform, but when her husband departed, for devotees as well, there is natural attachment. Who's that great demon who made that great ship, and Krishna was fighting for him, and he appeared before Krishna with an image of his father. He made an image of the father and beheaded Nanda Maharaj. And Krishna, became bewildered in lamentation. Because in spiritual consciousness, the soul, the essence of the soul, is to have love. Of course, Krishna is the supreme. Not only is it impossible to understand, but the principle is that we have come from Krishna. Because we eternally exist, Krishna eternally exists. And to understand even the material things is impossible. But the spiritual things with our small brain is literally impossible to understand how God created, how God expanded. But we have the Bhagavatam and we have some conception just to give us a starting idea. So Krishna also laments when something happens to his friends because Krishna loves. And so similarly, it is perfectly natural for any person, including and especially a devotee, when someone who is dear to them departs. So this is the lamentation that is being spoken of here. And it's also akinchi. It's very, very tiny. It is not of a, meaning there's no material conception in that lamentation. But she kept it minimum because she realized I have important things to do. That is the nature of a devotee. And especially of her husband, who was not only a great king, but the perfect devotee. So in this first paragraph, Srila Prabhupada quotes the verse from Bhagavad Gita that talks about the transmigration of soul, in which if someone is desiring to understand, show me the eternality of the soul, then by contemplating this verse progressively, one can begin to see, yes, the soul is always the same, but the body is changing. So we see each other, we see ourselves, and we don't notice this change. But if we have the situation in which there's someone we haven't seen, and all of a sudden we see them, say 10 years gap, 20 years gap, or if we knew a child, and then we see the child a little later on when the child's grown up, you look twice. Oh, are you the same one and same person? So physically, we are sure that it's not one and the same person. It's very different. But immediately we'll know, oh yes, this is one and the same person. So much stress is given in the Vedic literature about death. Because actually the stress in the Vedic literature is principally about one subject. That the incredible situation that the spiritual soul who is with Krishna somehow or other desires to have an existence separate from Krishna, and that is only possible in a situation which is not real, it's illusory. So of course the material world is reality, and there are real laws that if we disobey them, we will definitely experience some punishment, the repercussions. And if we obey them, then we experience some repercussions which we think are favorable. The two different types of reactions in this material world are pain, suffering, which are labeled as unfavorable, and the other, which is favorable, especially in India, they're still aware of the worship of the demigods and worship of the forefathers. This was common throughout the world. In the Greeks, they did this. The Romans, they gave that up. But the Chinese, they do that still. And they know that by doing that, you get a more favorable position. But actually, from the spiritual point of view, that's even worse, to have this material favorable position. Because the whole obstacle, the primary obstacle, the first obstacle, the intermediate obstacle, and the final obstacle for advancing in Krishna consciousness and the perfection of that, being able to associate with the Lord Krishna in pure devotional service and his devotees, is this attachment to this material body. What is this attachment to this material body? Is that I am thinking that I am this material body. So thinking doesn't just mean I'm thinking it in my mind. Actually, nowadays, people think that the thinking goes on here. The material identity arises, you know, to this. And the modern world, especially seeing, becomes the primary attachment. I see and then I want. I see and I want. So people become conditioned, although it's partially intentionally done, it's the modes of material nature. Arrange others to induce and seduce others to material attachment through the vision. So all the material elements can condition us. But actually, the soul is here and the subtle body is also here. So the thinking actually comes from here, but then goes to here of desiring, where we can look outwards. Matra spasha sukonteya, there's the next verse. Sitoshna sukutaya. So one is looking out into the material world, dukkha to avoid, and sukha to absorb that. So what to speak of in the Vedic system of life, if we just use our intelligence, which can be used in Krishna consciousness properly, we can see that up to a few years ago, and still in this world today, there are still people who are living a simple life. And even in the West, although we can't say that the religious or spiritual idea was very profound, people were fairly simple, or comparably, even 25 or 50 years ago. And if you were to write down a book, how many things you desire, how much of what your present situation you dislike, what do you want to have that you'll feel happy, previously the book was very small. It might not even be an entry. Is there anything that you feel is lacking in your life? I had the good opportunity, although I actually hadn't planned it, to somehow come to India in 1966, and I was living with the tribals. And the tribal book had no pages. And the villagers, I met and talked to thousands of villagers in many places in India, and even people in the towns. And if you said a book with a page, and had, what goes on in the mind, a page saying, oh, this is my desires, it was empty. Or maybe one or two desires. They wanted a bicycle. Or in the cities, they wanted education for their child. It was beginning, The Western mentality comes to India and to the rest of the world, the post-colonial era, through the principle of education, a very clever device that principally begins with the premise that in this simple way of life, in this village way of life, I cannot be happy. So the material conception, this conception of finding and our happiness in material things, material activities, is compounded in very complex ways. Especially, Prabhu was mentioning, he says, if you think Bombay has become hellish, you should see the rest of the world. But when you go to the rest of the world, it wasn't so in India even 5 or 10 years ago. But now recently, Abdul Rahman, your great leader, sent an email to every Indian. I don't know if everybody got it, but I got one. It was forwarded and forwarded and forwarded. Please send to everybody you know. And there he says that since we will become like America in 2020, then we should act like Americans. We go to Singapore and we don't spit on the ground, so we shouldn't do this. And so he gave everything except how to drive properly. He listed all the ways that how when Indians go abroad, because it's Indians want to go abroad and live like Americans, and when they go there, many will not even come back for a visit because they think, oh, this is like heaven, everything, it's true. So that is the difficulty in the material world, that as we progress, we start to think, oh, when we make very nice material arrangements, then we are happy. And it's based on something very interesting, which we can't really perceive, because it's very subtle, is that when we make this material identity, it is based on a premise, which is not a spoken premise or an intellectual premise, but it's a conception of the self. Then I am unhappy, and therefore one is forced to look for sukha in the material interactions. Matra spashas to sukha. There's no internal happiness. So the Vedas direct us that the happiness that we will find is not the external happiness of enjoying the material things, but the happiness that we will find, and this is progressively understood, Brahmaniti, Paramatmiti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdite, in three phases, that the happiness that we can only find, the only happiness, not just the real happiness, but the fact is it's the only happiness, is in the soul interacting in spiritual activities. So of course it's become more prominent in the world today that when people do look for a spiritual advancement, they get into impersonalism. But that also cannot bring happiness, because one has to act. The soul wants to act. So there is no permanent position of the soul in impersonalism. And then personalism begins by recognizing that there is a personal God, that Paramatma, in our heart, Krishna, whose attachment to us, because the first beginning is we're talking about attachment. So Krishna's attachment to us is an amazing thing. We can't become attached too much to any person. It's very difficult to actually really come to a state in which we have genuine feelings and genuine love for someone to the point that they're all important to us. You see, even now you see today the traditional feeling that children used to have for their parents is gone. It's eroded through the subtle brainwashing of modern materialism. It's still there to a certain extent in India, but it's breaking. It's breaking very quickly. And in the West, it's almost completely gone. That, oh, you see, my parents, they were so kind to me. I should, you know, take care of them, see to their comforts as they did for me. That human feeling, you see. And that of course, has a mundane tinge to it, but it comes from a natural natural substance of ourself, is to love and to care and to have feeling. And when someone else is in pain or someone else leaves, to feel pain, you see. So this becomes eroded. But Krishna actually is so amazing that although he dwells eternally in his planet, surrounded by persons whose love is incomparable and without understanding, Krishna comes with us, expanding with us, and stays in our heart for the purpose, sole purpose. He is ever attentive, 24 hours a day, as they say, 24/7. Krishna, there are two souls in the body. One is the Supreme Soul, who is watching, Upadrasta Anamantu, and ourselves, who is forgetting. So Krishna comes into this material world as the Paramatma, untouched, but always vigilant, 24 hours a day, trying to see how to get us to once again become Krishna conscious. So this fact itself, our brain can't comprehend how many souls there are in the spiritual world, how much love Krishna is getting. Krishna himself is Avijñāsvarāt, Krishna is Atmaram. Krishna, in theory, does not need anybody's love. Krishna is so happy. We can't, Anandamaya Vyasa, we can't begin. Sometimes we are all attracted to Krishna consciousness, and part of the reason is sometimes a lot of the times we get some taste for Krishna consciousness. Anandam buddhi vadanam pratipadam pranam swad. We get some amrita. But Krishna is the source of that amrita. What is the amrita that Krishna is tasting? So Krishna does not need, in theory, anyone's love. But still, and this is important to understand, still Krishna is hankering for the exchange of that love. So Krishna comes, and his desire is that even though who are we, you know, every single living entity, which is uncountable, he is ever vigilant, how will I make the arrangement that they will come back to their sanity and realize that they have become mesmerized by this material energy, they've become identified in a preposterous situation, a situation that's only pain? How will they begin to realize that whatever material happiness there is nothing but pain? It's just another form of pain. Prabhupada gives the nice example. He says that in the past, the kings sometimes would punish, in some era, they used to punish someone who committed a severe crime by putting their head in the water. And without air, you can live for 4 minutes. And a healthy, strong person might be able to sustain 4 minutes. So they had experts, and they would push their head in the water, and they'd see, okay, he's almost dead. And then they pull out. So Prabhupada explains, when they would take that breath after the one's dead, then they experience ananda. I'm almost dead, I'm happy. So the so-called material ananda is nothing but that. We're suffering, not realizing we're suffering. And then we again take some cessation from suffering and we're thinking happy. Prabhupada gives the other example of the camel chewing the thorns with the dry grass, which has no taste. And then as the grass and the thorns touch the camel's tongue, some blood comes, and the camel is eating that and thinking, very tasty, very salty, very nice. But he's only enjoying his own blood. So that is the condition totally of what we think is happiness in this material world. So unfortunately or fortunately, by understanding this, however much we do understand that, is not sufficient to get out of this material condition. So Prabhupada was mentioning yesterday that Srila Prabhupada's primary mission was to introduce the Harinam Sankirtan. So in the different yukas, in the different time periods, there is a different method. In the previous yuga, which is the Dwapara Yuga, actually when Lord Krishna appears, Dwapara Yuga comes as the third yuga, but that's a technicality in Sanskrit. So we can understand that in other of the kalpas, actually Dwapara Yuga comes as the second, and that's when worship of the deity is the means for spiritual advancement. So we are in the most unfortunate position because practically without an exception, almost everyone is deeply conditioned to this material body. We don't understand it, but we are very deeply conditioned. So in that state, all the other processes, yoga, where a person becomes very detached and can carefully dissect the difference between matter and spirit, requires total detachment, objectivity, no fear of truth. And if we talk to even very careful intellectuals, you see people are so attached to their conceptions. Everyone becomes so attached, and when you bring it up, they become bewildered or angry or confused. So to be able to make progress in that way is very difficult. And the point is, as Krishna says, that the whole process of yoga and the whole process of karma yoga and the whole process of gyan anyway is to understand who we really are. We are the eternal servant of Krishna. So we are extremely blessed that despite being in the most unfortunate group of persons who in human life live on this earth, people who are grossly attached to material nature, who want to become, plan to become, make all efforts to become more attached. That's the modern culture. Let us become more and more attached. Let us use all of our collective intelligence. Let's not just individually use our intelligence, but let us collectively use our intelligence and develop that ways in which we become more attached. Till 24 hours a day, we are just swimming in attachment and enjoyment and suffering and then attachment and enjoyment 24 hours a day. This is modern life. Bombay has become like that. And people think it's very nice now. And it is. You see it. It's like amazing, you know. You look at the modern cars and they're amazing. You look at the modern computer, it's amazing. It bewilders the mind. Material nature is such. So despite being so unfortunate that we're loving to become more materially attached, we're praying, we're just fantasizing, we're making 24-hour efforts, we're going to college to become IT graduates so that we can increase our material attachments and of everyone around us, exponentially improving our conditioning. In the middle of this most unfortunate period, the most fortunate benediction comes, that simply, there's the word simply, by chanting one name of Krishna, all of the attachments and all of the sins that one has correspondingly committed because of these attachments are washed away at once. But we must be very careful in understanding this washed away. It does not mean that we should become irresponsible. It does not mean that we're technically liable for this. But just as a king may offer a reprieve to someone who has done everything bad, even has been his worst enemy, so the similarly, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda have given us a reprieve by chanting this holy name one time, that one is no longer bound and conditioned, anchored to simply engage in the material activity. From the material perception, we only know material activity. Only by culture, spiritual culture that might be in our local culture. Prabhupada said actually this Krishna consciousness movement is a cultural movement. And he referred to the culture of India. But to understand that, actually one can see the culture all over the world. That predominantly in art and in song and in literature, up to 1800, all over the world, predominantly, maybe it wasn't on the highest, most sophisticated level. If you studied architecture, if you study the literature, the songs, the poetry, everything creative, 97% of what they did touched God. It had a principle that something is transcendental. And they made very little effort. There's one man, his name is Pritham Sorokin. He was the head. He started sociology in Harvard. Everyone hated him. The Tsars hated him. He was Russian, and the Bolsheviks hated him, because he was an honest man, and he was deeply religious. But he was also a scientist, and he did a study, very interesting for us. 100,000 things from around the world for 8,500 period of time, and he found only in the beginning, when this materialism came about, when the scientific revolution started to become accepted and focus, which means that we want to improve this material world with our intelligence. Up to that time, 97% of the culture had to deal with God as the primary purpose. They might have been building aqueducts and this and that, but that was secondary. That was just a facility so that we can mainly focus in our life. So, it is actually amazing, although we don't initially or may never conceive of it as amazing, the benediction of this chanting. Because, as it said in the Bhagavatam, Yatra Gayanti Mad Bhakta Tatra Tishtami Narada. Krishna, when his name is chanted, not that he is forced to do this. We can say Krishna's name and Krishna are identical. That's because Krishna chooses it to be so. So Krishna choosing it to be so, it is actually the nature, but he chooses it to be so. He wills it to be so. But especially, yatra ganti mad bhakta tatra tishtami narada. Lord is telling Narada that where the devotees chant my name, I personally become present. So this is the benediction. Yesham tvantakatam papam jananam punya karmana te dvandva mohanir mukta bhajanti mam vridavrataha. So this nirmukta, this liberation that we get by one-time chanting means it's a facility, it's a blessing. My dear sons, the Lord Chaitanya is saying, you chanted the name one time, now you can engage in devotional life. But that's our chance. So Krishna is kind. It's said that the worst of the aparads is that one chants, commits sinful activity on the strength of chanting. So this can be understood in part in the meaning of what I am presenting here, is that Krishna is giving us a wonderful chance out of His special kindness. We do not deserve this. There is no way that anyone could actually deserve this chance. There is no amount of pious activity. It is simply the mercy of the devotees. Actually, this existed throughout India. It is a long tradition. Prabhupada said that out of the people on the earth, and he's quoting Lord Chaitanya, Chaitanya Charitamrita, that of the people on the earth, that the birth in India is most fortunate. It's not most fortunate because people were plowing with bulls. That's nice. We don't say that's bad. It's not most fortunate because they had respect for their parents and all the different things of the village way of life. But it was most fortunate because it was a common thing and properly respected the holy name of the Lord. And it was an ordinary understanding that every child had. Oh, Krishna is God. And when they see a saintly person, even they don't know if this person is truly saintly. I had that experience once, because I'm not saintly, and I was taking a trip from Chennai to Salem. I was going from Salem to Mangalore. And I was just going to my berth and the train. And the ticket, the assistant in the coach assistant, when he saw me, he took off his shoes and he bowed down. Of course, it's very embarrassing to me, you know. Why should he bow down? I'm like a dirty dog or something, you know. But that I appreciated, that here is a man, you see, he's like in a very low-class position in the material life. His salary might be 1,000 rupees or 1,500 rupees at that time. But he's seeing someone who thinks, oh, there's a chance he might be a saintly person or interested in spiritual life. I should do my obeisances to him. So this was the fortune of the birth in India. I saw that when I came in 1966. I had no interest. I wasn't disinterested, but I had no specific interest to find out the spiritual life in India. I had a different interest, which was inverse. I came, I thought, by performing service to people that I'll understand the purpose of human life. Some peculiarity that I came with that desire. Then I realized, of all books, I read a book by Mahatma Gandhi, and My Experiment is the Truth. And there he said, Sanatana Dharma is that the soul is eternal, and the internal activity of the soul is service. I said, now I get it. You see. So then I started to chant Hare Krishna. So although I had no pious activity, just by being in India, actually the person who taught me chanting of Hare Krishna, I never met him. The first person, my Pravesh Dashatmaka Guru. He was the owner of a bus company in Visakhapatnam, and in his bus he had written the Maha Mantra. So I would take these horrible bus rides from where I was living in the hill stations. I was with the tribals, and if you can't imagine, you know, how many holes and no springs in the buses, and it's quite an amazing event. It's physically very painful. So, you know, you're just holding on not to fall into the aisles. The bus drive, there was no danger in the bus because there's hardly any buses, but the roads themselves and no seats, you know, the seat is wood and it's extremely painful. So to keep my mind occupied, I couldn't read even. I was reading Gita because that was the only book available. So I got a Gita, the only book, some coincidence. India, all little coincidences, right? The only books are Gandhi, and I read Sanatana Dharma, and Gita. I'm reading Gita, but you can't read. So in the bus, there was only one thing to see, and this is the Maha Mantra. So in that way, I got some absorption, you know. It's trying to escape from the suffering of the bus. I was reading Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. So the person who introduced me to the name, because it's India, there's people want to give the name to others. They want to give their spiritual fortune. Maybe they don't understand. As Sri Haridas Thakur says that, no, yes, Rupa Goswami says in the Antilila, that even if one chants the name inadvertently, such as in Urdu, one might say haram. So there's no intention. Haram, oh, what's happening, you know? It's a horrible thing, haram. So one has no intention of saying Ram, you know, but then one says and one gets the full credit. And he goes on to explain that even if the syllables are separated by several syllables, no matter how one says Ram, Krishna is so eager, let me give him this credit. It doesn't matter who said it. A person may go, like in America, they have a thing called Pizza Rama. So two people are talking to each other and say, let's go to the Pizza Rama. So they said the Pizza Rama. So all of a sudden Krishna said, oh, he said Rama. Let us see. Let's give him that chance that he might engage in devotional service. So we should see what is that fortune we get by that chanting. And we should appreciate. So our job as aspiring devotees, adosh radha tata sadhu sangha bhajana kriya anartha nivritti, these first four things are the foundation, is that we must develop faith. So faith is of two kinds. The first is of a kind of blind faith. My father was chanting Hare Krishna, I chant Hare Krishna. So that's very, very wonderful. Because we can see the children who are brought up in Krishna consciousness, whether they had Western families or Indian families, we can see if they remain in that culture, very soon they begin to have experience and get great eagerness naturally in devotional life because they're getting the taste. But still, because the onslaught of the material nature, especially in this Kali Yuga, very great. Kali Yuga, through the leaders of society, through the kings, so-called kings, through the intelligence, through the business people, through the labor class, through all the classes, just working very, very intelligently to bring people to have desires. Everywhere you touch, even in the villages now, they want that every single village become electrified with satellite TV. And you see, like the Tamil government, they gave free TVs. And they have like these TV huts. So even in remote places, they have some power and then they have TV so that all the villages can come and watch TV. So they can become attached. See, people don't realize what this takes, you know, that they're sinking away from the spiritual life. Because there's only so much of our consciousness. And the material, it pollutes. It remains there. And then we go back to that. And then we want it again and again. Even psychologists in the West, they have realized that these material things seduce people away from their spiritual life. One famous psychologist, he wrote in his book, you know, how this material arrangement seduces people from their spiritual life. And another man has done a study and shown that as people engage in material activities, they lose their heart, they lose love for others, which will include spiritual life. Because he's very spiritually inclined, but they are scientists, so they don't put that as a center. But people who progress like this, they understand. So we must develop our faith by seeing around us very carefully Krishna consciousness. We must understand this by studying the Vedas, by associating with devotees, by reading the Bhagavatam, in ways in which we're trying to understand why is this the truth? How is this the truth? How does it apply? And seeing around us, yes, as people progress in material life, they have more suffering. So although we may be in a particular material situation that we cannot walk away from because of the lack of varnashrama, even the basic principles of varnashrama are not there, still, we must see, oh, that to try to aspire to improve ourselves in this material life is not what we want to do. So this is a faith that develops. Adoshrada, tata sadhu sangam. We can understand sadhu sangam that as we come into sadhu sangam, that we'll have a friend, a champion, an associate, someone who will help us as we might want to again engage and increase, succumb to the seduction of material activities, material desires. Someone who will guide us. Prabhupada described association of devotees. He said a stick is very easy to break, but if you tie the sticks together, it gets strength. So, adoshrada tata sadhu sangam. So the sadhu sangam association devotee gives us strength and should increase our faith. Our conviction should become spread throughout. No, I understand why I should not engage in this material activity as my primary thing. I should always remember it's temporary. And I should do everything possible to make so many plans and follow up those plans of advancing in my Krishna consciousness. And it begins internally. I should see, I have all of these attachments. By bhajana kriya, then one develops some spiritual attachment. In the Gita, in the 9th chapter, 2nd verse, prataksavagamam dharmyam shushukam kartam avyaya. That one gets a direct experience. This is our great chance, you know. Even though we might not have gotten this in millions of lives, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, we can immediately get some taste. Whatever form of devotional service, it doesn't matter, but the holy name is there, or any form of devotional service. Some people, they just like the smell of incense. Some people just like prasadam. We can't discriminate, someone doesn't like chanting. But anyway, we have this chance of getting this. And then anartha nivritti. We must say, this is our number one problem. We must get rid of these material attachments. So we must see how we are materially attached. So it's not a happy prospect. See how I am materially conditioned. See how I've gone wrong. People don't like to say, how have I gone wrong? So we should make one book and see how many pages, how many entries we have in the book. In how many ways have I done stupid activities? And how many ways have I offended others? And how many ways have I not appreciated the Vedic literature? How many ways have I not appreciated the mercy of the devotees of my spiritual master, of Lord Chaitanya? We should do that. And then we should decide, no. I want to improve myself. And improve yourself how? By the association of devotees. This is our greatest chance. By the gifts that the devotees have given us. One of the main disturbances in the Hare Krishna movement in the beginning years, and it might still be existing today, came, and we can say almost the only disturbance came, that devotees did not know, in the situations in which devotees did not know how to appreciate each other, how fortunate they are to be in the association of devotees. Although we don't want to minimize the attachment that one has or should have towards the personal spiritual master when one gets initiated, and of Srila Prabhupada, who is the founder acharya of the Krishna consciousness movement, or of the deities, or of Lord Chaitanya. So we don't want to minimize that. But we should understand that as we maximize the attachment for the devotees, because they are the gateway for developing our attachment in all the different ways, that we should see as a great opportunity. Chanakya Pandit says that a learned man is he who can take great spiritual lessons from the ordinary sweeper in the street. So if that is true, then a person who is just have even the smallest spark for Krishna consciousness, smallest spark, they like something, then a devotee, he should see, you see? That I should learn from that devotee. We should take that opportunity of association with devotees. People are a different mentality, so we may not always be able to blend with them. That is natural. Even in the spiritual world, there are always at least two camps. But when they disagree, there's no real disagreement. They just have a different desire. But there's no conflict amongst them. They just have a different way that they want to please Krishna. And Krishna enjoys this, how they compete with each other. No, I'll be the best in pleasing Krishna. But they always appreciate how the other is a greater devotee than themselves. The Bhagavatam and the books of the Goswamis and the Chaitanya Charitamrita gives us an opportunity that we can't actually appreciate of glimpsing into the minds of the great devotees. And when we glimpse into the mind of the greatest of devotees, Srimati Radharani, she is just thinking that she's not a devotee. She's always just eager to engage others in devotional service. In her mind, she's not thinking, I'm a great devotee. She's hardly thinking she's a devotee. And she's the direct expansion of Krishna herself. So a devotee is looking, when he or she is in the association of devotees, oh, here, this devotee likes very nice to dress very nicely for Krishna. This devotee puts tilak so nicely. This devotee may not sing nicely, but when it comes time to Chaitanya, you can see in his face, see in their body, they respond, oh, they're so enjoying. I had the opportunity to be in Jaipur in 1971 when we had a program there. It was our first program there. And the Radharaman temple there. And Prabhupada enjoyed it very much. When it came time for Mangal Arati, you know, the whole city is really kind of dark. There's no street lights. But there came the sound from outside the temple, from the streets. And the sound was coming from everywhere, but it converged. Almost like bumblebees, you know, like a group of bumblebees. What do they call them? A swarm of gumblebees. And it's, you know, so the ladies, the Matajis, were so eager for coming to the Mangal Arati, they'd be running, you know. And actually, you can't stand in front of the deities. You get run down, you know. They'll stampede you. You might not appreciate it when they run you down. So we all learned to just stand fully to the side because they wanted to see the deities when they opened, you know. Nothing could stand between them. So they were so eager, you see. So Krishna is just looking for this eagerness. So we have two jobs to do. And they're interrelated. And the first is most important. Now that we've gotten this opportunity of Krishna consciousness, there's somebody we have to preach to. We should preach to that person morning, noon and night. And that's ourselves. In the Nectar of Instructions, it gives so many instructions about how to advance in Krishna consciousness. So this is association of devotees. But the first person we have to be kind to, the first person we have to be generous with, is our own self. So in conclusion, I'll just give you one nice statement Srila Prabhupada gave me, and one of the advantages of his direct association was that although Srila Prabhupada gave everything to everyone, there was no secrets. There is no one that Prabhupada leaned over to and whispered to and told something that he didn't tell to everyone. He might have said, like he would tell me things about another devotee, so that in discretion, the devotee's behavior could be corrected. Sometimes there were people who got angry with me because I was trying to apply something that Prabhupada didn't want to apply. Because he told me, he said, whenever the spiritual master gives an instruction and a correction to the disciple, he does so so that he does not discourage him. So Srila Prabhupada did not want to say things because the devotee might become discouraged and then give up their enthusiasm. So he was careful. Those who were a little sensitive, maybe because of a lot of attachment to him, even though they might be very nice devotees, very solid, by Prabhupada criticizing them, they might go away. And he didn't want to see that. So on one occasion, Gurjaralal Nanda, the former Prime Minister by default of India twice, when he was the President of India, he became Prime Minister twice when the Prime Minister died. So he has that opportunity to be in the book that he was twice Prime Minister. He was a very nice man, and he really was enthusiastic about meeting Prabhupada. So I arranged a special meeting, and Prabhupada's order to me was that I would sit through these meetings. Prabhupada was more than his normal enthusiastic in talking to Gurjala Nanda. They had a very nice interchange. So then I went with Mr. Nanda and saw him to the car and came back and sat in Prabhupada's room because he ordered me that whenever you have a moment, you sit. So I didn't think I should sit with Prabhupada, but he ordered me. So I sat there. And Prabhupada, he was still like super beaming, you know. And Prabhupada said, preaching is to see the spiritual spark and fan it. So out of the very sweet things that I got by being with Prabhupada, when he would just say something, that he would just speak, and it was always fantastic, and it was all there in his book. But we don't find this exact phrase in the book, to see the spiritual spark in fan it. So who should we see the spiritual spark in? Ourselves. We should say, what is my attachment to Krishna? And we should say, oh, what are the things that are keeping me from that? So by developing, Prabhupada gives the hint here, by developing that fire, whatever is our attachment, it may not be chanting. It may be chanting. It may be japa. It may be one thing. It may be 50 things. We may just like to make things clean. We have an aversion to this in Kali Yuga. In India, you have this aversion, shudra, you know, look down upon shudra. It says, kalo shudra sambhava, that in Kali Yuga, everyone is born as shudra, no one is born as Brahman. And from then we fall down. Most people are mlechas, even in India, even Brahman family, they're simply mlecha. And only by the culture then they become elevated once again. No one is born Brahman. So shudra is very nice, but people disdain it. In India, if you tell, oh Prabhu, we're going to give you the greatest task, the most fortunate task, you are going to, for 1 year, clean the pots of the kitchen. So how many people in India would like to join the Krishna consciousness movement, that this is what you're going to be doing for the 1 year? And he says, and we'll know that you're making more advancement if you sign up for our 5-year program. Would you like to sign up 5 years? From morning to night, you clean the pots. But in the spiritual world, they're in line cleaning the pots of Krishna. You see, the devotee is very happy. Oh, you've given me such a nice service to clean the pot. So, but whatever is our natural attachment, we should go for that. If I like to clean pots, then the person should encourage. Oh, cleaning the pots, that's so nice. The more, when I was told by my temple president, he was always encouraging. And I was cleaning the brass. He said, the more the brass shines, the more your heart is shining. So the manager sees, oh, this person likes to clean. We should understand that this is the most glorious activity. We don't care a person goes out and collects, came back with 1,000 crores of rupees. That's nice. We can use that nicely and it can help many people. But the person who's cleaning that brass and cleaning the pots and they're spotless, wow, you know, they look as good as new. That is as good a service because he's cleaning his heart. You see, he's cleaning his heart. So I just thought I would leave you with that one nice, beautiful, poetic statement. Preaching is to see the spark and to fan it. So as we do that for ourselves and we meet others, then whatever their little tendency is in devotional life, we don't want to make it little, but whatever it is, big, small, that is our service. That actually, we don't need to do that. Krishna is there as Paramatma. Krishna is there as, you know, great devotees like Prabhupada and his books, they'll get that. But it's our chance. Oh, you see, this person is a devotee and we should encourage. Prabhupada said, he said, making a life member, we should not take this as something mundane, collecting money. And not at all. In fact, Prabhupada told me and enforced it upon me, and from the beginning in 1970 when he created the life member program, he said that 50% of the life membership should go towards books, to be given to the member, so that's a legitimate exchange. Give me 10,000 rupees, I give you 5,000 wholesale of books. It looks like 15,000 rupees. The person feels, oh, they're very honest with me. In different conversations, this was Prabhupada's idea, that they should feel, oh, you see, they're people of integrity. I gave them 15,000, they gave me 20,000 rupees of books. Oh, they're very honest. They're very good in their business. They're very scrupulous. Prabhupada wanted that impression. Not that we show that impression, but we are that impression. We should feel honesty they've given us. But still, there's another 50% left over.
And Prabhupada said, and that should go towards projects, something substantial, preferably, if an emergency, for festivals. So I was always in a quandary for maintenance. And Prabhupada personally supervised me. He was my acting GBC. And he would ask me, when he would come, no matter from a world tour, he would sit on the Vyasasan for Guru Puja, and he would call me over and have me stand by his right side as they were offering puja on his left side, whichever way it was. And he said, so Tejas, when you get money, what do you do with it? And I said, I put it in the bank. And then, he said, 50% goes to the book fund. And he never worried that 50% would also go to construction, because he knew that was also there. But his first purpose, 50% goes to the book fund. And he never asked me, are you giving the books? Because he knew we gave the books, because people gave him that report. But the principle was. So, we should not think, oh, this... Not to say that it's not to be greatly praised. Someone goes and gets 1,000 crores of rupee donation. That is greatly appreciated. Not to minimize that. That is not the point here. But whatever a person's devotion, you see, that we should say, oh, this is so nice. We have such nice association. So when one is preaching member, Prabhupada said, he said just like the tip of the finger, you catch it and pull the whole body. Or you poke a needle with a thread through the cloth and you pull. He says, making a member is practically converting them to Krishna consciousness. So the devotee who, let's say his service is making a member, he should be saying, oh, here is a person, and my humble service is to engage them in devotional life. I am somehow or other their Praveshta Shatmaka Guru, even though they might be very much a Vaishnava. And I am just connecting them with the parampara. And someone is polishing the pot. Oh, the pot will be so clean that Krishna will want to eat from it. Krishna does not have to eat. What is this saying that because I'm doing everything in devotional life and I cook and I'm cooking fantastic, what is there that Krishna wants to eat it? Krishna wants to eat it because the devotee is thinking, Krishna, I'm not qualified to cook. But please, I'm humbly begging you, please accept what I am cooking. So Krishna is going to accept that sincerity. One is chanting, of course. If one's doing it, intended or not intended, well intended, Krishna always snips. Krishna always accepts, you know. He'll know what your mentality is, but the devotee doesn't think, oh, Krishna has to eat what I cook. You know. Then Krishna will stop eating. I don't care if the pot is clean, I'll cook for Krishna. Krishna, why should he accept? So the devotee always is meditating, oh, you see, it's my fortune to do this. How do I make myself qualified to do this? I can't, but I have to really try. I have to pay attention. And when he sees another person, even some street person, and you know, they're in another country, and they look dirty, and he says, Hare Krishna, and they say, Hare, oh, what a great devotee. Oh, I'm so lucky to have your association. Anyway, thank you for tolerating this poor attempt at a class today. So we have any questions? Anybody to comment or correct anything I said? It's full of errors.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for this nice class for you. You said that, like Prabhupada said, that we are not professional reciters.
Yes.
And that we should speak from the heart.
Yes.
So can you elaborate on that?
Another instance, because there are many, and hopefully by the devotee's mercy I'll get this book, which keeps on getting postponed, which is my attempt to explain Prabhupada's kindness on me, where he gave me his association, forcibly dragging in. There was Prabhupada's first disciple. His name is Acharya Prabhakar. And Prabhupada, I don't know if you know, that Prabhupada started the League of Devotees in the 1950s or so. And then Prabhupada moved to Jhansi. And when he took sannyas, he was staying there. And his first disciple was a very great Sanskrit scholar. I don't know if he's still with us. His name was Acharya Prabhakar. And Prabhupada's comment was, which is very interesting. He said that the Charyaprabhaka perhaps is the greatest Sanskrit scholar alive. Interesting in that statement, which reveals Prabhupada's humility, is that Prabhupada roomed with him. They stayed one room. And they would only speak in Sanskrit. So that means a person who can speak fluently with the greatest Sanskrit scholar and talk Shastra must also be the greatest Sanskrit scholar. But leave that aside. So Prabhupada would always encourage me to do things that were difficult and that would have difficulties in them. And at one point, Prabhupada was thinking that we could use Acharya Prabhakar Center as our center in Delhi, because we were having difficulty, you know, maintaining by ourselves. And Acharya Prabhakar had this center in E block of Kirtinagar. It was quite sizable, and it was underused. So Acharya Prabhakar had written to them. So Prabhupada was encouraging me to engage Acharya Prabhakar. Although, you know, how can I be engaging Acharya Prabhakar? I felt Acharya Prabhakar, he's a great scholar. He's senior to me and Prabhupada's disciple. But still, it's my service that he may be superior to me. But and in the past, Prabhupada, when we would have these festivals, Prabhupada would have some important invitee, you know, maybe the Canadian ambassador even, or the governor of Delhi, or some important person from the public, or the mayor of Delhi, speak. Then he'd have one of his disciples speak, and then he would speak. So we had established this very unique center in Delhi, where we had people, there were rugs on the floor, and books surrounding the room, and chairs. Because Prabhupada felt that modern people in India should have this kind of facility, especially Delhi. So we had established that, and so to attract people, I had Acharya Prabhakar, he humbly agreed to give an introduction to my talk. So I knew that Prabhupada was very cautious about, you know, who spoke, but I felt, you know, since he's Prabhupada's disciple and he's not giving the lecture, so I'm giving the lecture, so I take the responsibility. So Prabhupada came, and whenever he would come, he says, "So what news?" And then he'd have me report to him what had happened since his last visit. He came 27 times to Delhi, by the way. And then he'd call me to Vrindavan and give more reports. So I'm always reporting what news. So I was explaining various things, and he was particularly interested how I was using this hall. And I said, you know, we're giving the talks, and I had Acharya Prabhakar give the introduction to my talk. Prabhupada says, "No." And he looked like that, you know. He says, "No, do not let him speak. He is not following." So, Acharya Prabhakar wasn't doing anything really wrong, but he was just not continuing to be that kind of, you know, full-on disciple of Prabhupada. He says, "You are following little. Therefore, you can speak." Then Prabhupada explained, he says, just like you can see in Chandni Chowk, there is one temple near Chippiwada Kalan on the corner. They have these kathas on Ram. They have this Rama kathas. But people come, they listen, and there is no effect. Because that person, he is a professional speaker. He's being paid. So it's not that we are... It's not that we should be preparing ourselves so I give an impression to someone how nicely I speak. A devotee will like to speak nicely, no doubt. A devotee will like to chant nicely. But the principle is to be sincere. Another time Prabhupada said, he says, to give a class, one simply read the verse and read from the purport. And what one understands, and that's important to know, what one understands, one can speak. Only as far as one understands. So therefore, one should examine, what do I understand? Is it according to sadhu, shastra, guru? One shouldn't give according to one's imagination. Oh, I understand this, and go and give some very complicated thing. But one should endeavor to understand. Even if one doesn't, it's okay. If one just listens. Even if one is not attentive. Still, it's beneficial. But attentive means that in every word there is some importance. In every word spoken in the verse, in every word in the purport, there's some importance. It's not whimsical. So we should endeavor to understand the application of these words. So whatever you have understood is sufficient. One who is more advanced will feel happy that you've understood that. One who is on the same level as you is very happy that you're also with him.
And one who has not understood that, even though they might have understood 1,000 things, they'll appreciate, oh, this is very nice. I can understand something additional to help me advance in Krishna consciousness. So I think we should end there. Thank you for tolerating me. Thank Prabhu for allowing me to come. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to the assembled devotees.
Gopal Govinda.
Yeah. Fancy microphone.